Les colloques du Collège de France.
Welcome back. We're going to start our last session. Our next speaker is Adrienne Gré-Régamet. Adrienne is an environmental scientist and landscape planner, specializing in land system science and social ecological modeling. She has been a professor at the Chair of Planning, Landscape and Urban Systems at the Institute for Spatial and Landscape Development at ETH Zurich since 2008. And she leads international and interdisciplinary research with her team working on digitally supported participatory landscape and urban planning. And that's what she's going to be talking about today, challenging us and our imagination maybe with latest development.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Sandra, for the invitation. And I would like, as she said, to challenge you a little bit today, because we are all striving for fact-based decision-making. And you know how difficult it is that fact-based are really triggering some actions nowadays, especially for transforming landscapes, as you can see here. Landscape, I understand it as a concept a little bit broader than what we have heard before, where the landscape is just the pattern of certain land uses. I see landscape as something which is perceived by human and where human influenced that landscape. And so the landscape emerges from this interaction between the social and ecological system. So this question triggers us to tackle a little bit the new question: what is the role then really of science in being able to design transformative actions? And I would like to start with a philosopher of the start of the 20th century, John Dewey, who said, scientific inquiry is a time out. It's a break from action, which means that you wouldn't just produce science by observing the past, but you reflect on action to generate new knowledge. So you look, you take a break, and you look at the actions and not just at the data from the past or from the present. And I'm asking this because we have a big problem in looking at, for example, activities in sustainable development programs, where we see that they usually don't unlock new pathways. And we observe that we are often trapped in a social, ecological, dynamical interaction. Think here about this example from Stephen Lade, who presented examples of sub-African regions where people have problems with producing food. This decreases their savings, which influence how much people they can have working on the field, and again, influence how much income they have. And it's a feedback loop. It's a positive feedback loop, not in terms of positive something good, but in terms of something which accelerates and supports itself. And this is even worse when we look at this second example, where the savings also influence how much you would then manage the land. The less people you have, the more you will start to intensify the small management of a small parcel, and you will lose the natural capital. By doing this, you might also use the traditional knowledge, the traditional practice you've been applied before, which leads to a trap in the cultural capital, which itself then again feeds back to a loss of production and again an available income. These feedback loops are even accelerated now under climate change or political shifts. And this is a little bit the question: how can we unlock these pathways? How can we are locked in this lower development pathway leading to unsustainable development. And the question is raised, how can we unlock the new pathways which fundamentally move away from what we've done, from these interactions, to go to desired futures? And if you look at the land system science literature, you see that we have been talking about seeds of the good Anthropocene. And I'm not an ecologist, and maybe the link to what we heard before, but these seeds, what they do is they try to move you away from this pathway you had where you were locked in. And you can see the work of Elena Bennett, which shows in the top that the indicators, the global biophysical indicators of environment, show a degradation of the ecosystem, while a lot of social and health indicators show an increase. But if we don't bend the curve, this green curve, we're going to have a dystopian future because we'll have health and social benefits at the cost of the environment. The problem with these seeds is if you look at this development pathways is that they are looked a little bit into a tunnel. And you see that this tunnel changes in terms of its radius. And where the transformation can be abrupt is usually at a system which is non-resilient. If it's resilient, it would absorb all the shock. So you need a system which, in sense, is not very resilient, where you have the resilience here would be presented by a big tunnel where it would absorb the shock. So these seeds need to enter in a system which is not resilient so that you suddenly unlock this social ecological trap. And I would like to propose today to unlock and to help with design to unlock this trap. Why design? Because design is an intervention, as we've seen with the seeds of the good Anthropocene. It's an intervention which is contextualized. It is value-based, and also often it has an aesthetical, affective dimension. However, these seeds or this landscape design might not function. And we've heard a lot today about different methods to assess how good certain things function. And this is why if these seeds can be linked to a simulation, and we can calculate if these designs are really working, we can try to, with time, to develop a solution which is first accepted by people. People understand it, it's contextual, it's something people effectively relate to, but it's also functioning. However, to link these two, I would say, disciplines, because design is in that sense not really a science, it's not that easy because we have different methodology, we have different ontology, and you can see that the science itself tries to understand the present while the design is more aimed at changing that present. And when we talk about science, we really try to have a theoretical knowledge and develop further theoretical knowledge, while design is something which is more intuitive, creative, and looks at action, at practices, and justify the choices through the success of the artifact. So by doing an informed design, so a design science loop, we are moving away a little bit from this Popperian falsibility theory. No, we get away from that. And we have some new plans which result from probably, if possible, a collaborative process, which are anchored in an aesthetical, functional, contextual, cultural, and societal consideration, and is just supported by scientific reflection. That's why I would like to go with you along with three theses, trying to show you how design can support science in helping this transformation. First one, transformation requires an intentional system redesign. Secondly, informed design can help translate that knowledge into something actionable. And third, informal design helps creating new narratives, identity, behaviors. And I'm going to illustrate this, bringing you to Madagascar, to the capital of Madagascar, Antananarivo. And you can see here this picture, which shows how vulnerable these cases are. It's a subtropical climate of the highland, which was characterized by very dry time between May and October, but also a strong rainy season from November on. And what happens is that increasingly with climate change, we see extreme droughts, while also we see these big floods here, the Hurricane Anna in 2002, which destroyed most of the crops, a lot of informal settlements you can see on these dikes, and also a lot of people died in this thing. And this system is very strongly trapped in this social ecological transition. You can see what's happening here at the bottom. This is the landscape trajectory. We have originally a lot of paddy areas, rice paddies, around the city, producing around 15% of the food which is used in the city. The problem is with the drought, people cannot produce twice rice per year, and they start to dig the soil here, you can see here, and to sell the soil to the people to build bricks. So bricks become an ecosystem services. We talked about ecosystem services and come back here. And these holes here create swamps. These swamps are good for fish production, but they're not very effective. So they usually try then in between to create raised garden to produce at a high value, a very small area which produce crops which they can sell on the market. However, if these things don't function and don't give enough money, very quickly they will lose it to people claiming the land for urbanized area, which is around 4% of the area per year, which leads to a trap of this system. The more climate change you have, the more of these droughts, the more this process here is accelerated. So the question is, why do we need to have this design to transform such traps? First, it's because it's a systemic problem, and we need to reshuffle the social and the ecological interactions. And here you can see the development of the ecosystem services which are produced by this landscape transition. We see here the paddy sector, which produces aesthetics, water availability, flood, recreation, gardening, rice, and fishing. And we see that through the decrease or through the changes here, we are losing a lot of these services. Before it changes totally, where you have a very big loss, especially in the flooding, you see that these raised gardens, they produce somehow a benefit which allows to balance somehow this development. Intervening in that system to have this raised garden need a systemic change. And this is what we identified in these in this project. Especially, we have a lot of mismatches between the social and the ecological system. You can see here financial mismatches, we have power mismatches, we have enforcement mismatches, we have temporal mismatches, etc. So we do have a lot of social ecological mismatches which do not allow to have this raised garden. So we thought, let's try to get people to be motivated and intentionally think about the changes they would like to have a bottom-up approach and a co-production process. Because at the end, it's the people there who will need to do the raised garden. It's not in that very corrupted system, it's not the state who can really provide this support. So we decided to work with an informed design, which tries to bridge our operationalization of the theory into some actions. But to talk between the two disciplines, science and design, you need a language. And one of the language we heard about senses before is LIDAR. LIDAR is a laser scanning method which allows us to get the terrain, the topology. But the topology is more than just giving us an image. It helps us to understand what is going on, and especially it helps the designer to modify it into something new. So here we see the topology of that area, which gets flooded, and where these raised gardens could be created. We try to decompose and compose that area, and I'll show you how. Here in this design science loop, where we started to analyze different scenarios, different raised garden typology, different new dikes, reparation of old dikes, etc. And we calculated, for example, hydrological ecosystem services under these new designs. And we iterated with the people several times to develop a final design which was functioning and acceptable by the people. This is this final design under different climate scenarios. And you can see here how the design looks like. It looks like a picture, but this is the LIDAR data, which is the product of this co-production process you can see here with the people. However, to do this, you finally need to change values. You need to change beliefs, because people are afraid to make that change. They're afraid to move away from the past they were on. So you need to have new narratives, identities, and behavior. So we tried with a series game to integrate these different elements here, these different design elements, into a game to try to understand what were the enablers and the barriers of these changes, and what are the stories they could develop together, shared stories about this new identity. And what you can nicely see specifically here is that people are very afraid to move away. They want to stay as they are. However, we can see that these raised garden and these water reservoirs here are really important. They show that people can imagine, they can have new ideas of doing something together, especially look at that if they can even do money out of that, a new recreational area out of that, using the aesthetics to sell something before they were just using as an adaptive solution. So to finalize, I would like to say that design and science can complement each other, especially if they are give us something which is intentional, actionable, and vernacular, which is based in the context. And it helps us to develop together a shared vision. It enables to negotiate the trade-offs we have. We will have losers and winners when you do actions. But by using such technology, we can also have multiple and diverse actors discuss together. So if this design science loop is embedded into this gray here participation process you can see here, we have much more chances to have an implementation of such actions, which are then contextual, which are aspirational. And of course, they're not the truth themselves, but an actions, a tool for action. Thanks a lot.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.